This is Cute Lazarus.
Is this our remix or no?
This is our theme song, and we love it.
Goodbye, Horses. The same song that Buffalo Bill and his tight tuck were dancing to in Silence of the Lambs.
Damn, did he have a tight tuck.
The tightest.
Of tucks.
That was so creepy.
It's still one of the creepiest
movies of all
ever.
Time.
Ever. And that scene in particular. Like, when you've got Hannibal Lecter in your movie, and no one on earth would rather hang out with Buffalo Bill over Hannibal Lecter, you know you've got some creepy characters.
And he always had a moth crawling on his on his nose.
Everything about him was just so gross.
I got her card in the back.
Whoever chose this song, though, deserves
an Academy
Oscar.
Award.
Absolutely. Like, it's perfect.
But Hugh Lazarus was never heard from again.
I've never heard
of
him.
Song.
Remember,
I always say, if you're ever at a party and this song comes on, beware the person that gets on the D floor first. If they start doing the scarecrow dance with the arms straight out.
It's Ken Bone. Ken Bone listens to this song.
I saw Ken Bone on Jimmy Kimmel last night.
I saw a picture of Ken Bone golfing in like a red sweater.
That's his thing now.
Just a big barrel.
Yeah. That's his thing. Like 15 minutes of fame, he's got to have his red sweater on. But he was actually pretty funny.
Really?
With Kimmel. Yeah, like pretty, like witty.
Really?
Which I was surprised. I don't know why. You just assume that he was going to be kind of an awkward, strange
like a
dude.
Nerd.
Seemed like a pretty funny guy.
He said he was still not decided on who he's voting for.
Which is so ridiculous on so many levels. But anyway, Leafs in action tonight in Minnesota. You can watch the game on TSN4. And tonight is an opportunity for the Maple Leafs to really make a statement because
bounce back.
This is their biggest challenge of the young season. Mm-hmm. Their first back-to-back, another game on the road, the way in which they blew that game last night. And I know they're going to be positive, and they still got a point, and they haven't lost a game in regulation. They've got four of a possible 6 points, which prior to the year you would have taken.
Mm-hmm.
You win 2 out of 3, you're a playoff team.
Yep.
But they would have landed in Minnesota at, what, like midnight, 1 o'clock? You get to bed a little bit later.
Yeah, it's not
it's hanging
it's a quick
over
little
you.
Jaunt, yeah. You're right. That's the best thing, though, and I think, you know, O can speak to it. Ray can, too. Excuse me.
You're all right.
Choking.
You're good.
He's
done. He's gone. He's done.
He's done.
It's the bird feed.
Lindy Ruff.
It's the bird feed
it's
you
not
eat all the time.
Feed.
Yes, it is, dude. I'm telling you. You eat rabbit food every day. That bag, it's loaded with like hay and wheat.
Let's just go to Ray and give him a break.
Hey. You might need to take this shift off. You're on the bench for the rest of the shift. Let's bring in Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey
just
analyst.
Just choking.
Ray, what happens if you choke like that in the middle of a game? Do you just say, Gordo, it's all yours?
Yeah.
You're on your mute button. Flight,
you're hanging on it, and you're like, oh, God, I hope I can clean this out, man.
That's my worst nightmare. And it's happened to me. It's happened
to
all of us.
It happens to all of us. But neither one of you would throw me a lifeline.
I was going to, but...
My face is turning blue.
The thing is, I thought you recovered because you hit the cough button, got the cough out, and I'm like, all right, I got to wait to see if you're going to recover, and
right.
You're about to make a very quality point, so I didn't want
to
throw you a lifeline.
I tried to fight through. I was just going to say, and Ray, you can chime in on this. As an athlete, you want to get right back out there after something goes wrong or you don't play very well or you maybe have an off night. You want to get the best thing for the Maple Leafs tonight is to play right again. To erase last night's game.
It is, and the worst thing about it is if you have a night where it didn't quite go so well, like Frederik Andersen, and you don't get to get back there, and you get to stew on it and think about it, and good, you can go practice, and you have a really good practice, and then you go back to your room because you've got nothing else to do after the morning skate, and you sit there and you think about the goals again. I'm sure that's don't know why he wouldn't do that. That's what I mean. I know whenever I'd have a couple of days to think about a game or, you know, you try and push it away, but it's like a bad dream. It just keeps coming back and you just want the chance to kick it away. I'll tell you, we were standing outside the Leafs area at the rink here today and we were waiting for them because we had to wait for them to start their meeting before Babcock would to his availability. The soccer game that they had going on was the loudest soccer game I've ever heard. Like, they're like a college team. They're young. They're, for those guys, I think they might even forgot already. And then Babcock went and reminded them in the meeting, I'm sure. And I think they'll be fine. I thought they showed their age last night in the third period. That was the big red panic button was jumped up and down a couple of times on. That's what it looked like to me.
Ray, what do you think of Austin Matthews' line mates? Is that sometimes I just watch, and I know the first game was fantastic. You got four goals, but just it's difficult enough to play center ice in the National Hockey League, and now he's got to go out there with two rookies. Who I love Hyman. He's a hard worker, but is he a guy that compliment the number one overall player? No. You look who Laine's playing with in Winnipeg, and then you look at Nylander. It's a couple shifts he's engaged, and then he falls asleep for 25 minutes, and then he might show up for the third. Is it fair to this guy to roll him out there every night?
Well, yeah, I guess on the nights it's going well, sure, they're talented and they probably like playing together. But didn't we, when they were kind of getting set right before the season, were we not talking about the way the lines were set up? The Kadri, Komarov, McCulloch line seemed a little odd in the mix of everything. You know, like, I think those four wingers, Hyman, Nylander, McCulloch, and Komarov are going to get jumbled around here before too long. You know, like having, to your point, two real young guys, and then my thought of these two older guys together, it really doesn't make enough sense to me. It seems like you're going to need a little more balance than that. You know, do Bozak and JVR need to be joined at the hip? I don't know. Maybe they'll change that in a little bit. Last night, I mean, they were one of the groups that certainly, you know, that certainly didn't have a very good third period. As my coach in Hartford told me one night after my second game, I had 4 points and I was -4. He told me I was a threat at both ends of the ice. and that's kind of what they were last night.
Well, yeah, I look at the forward group, and in terms of high-quality skill, I think they've got five players who can be dangerous on any given shift. JVR, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Kadri. And I don't include Bozak in that. I certainly wouldn't include Hyman in that.
Nope.
So if you've got five guys who you feel like on any given shift or any given night can supply you with offense or be dangerous at any given time, how do you map it out? I mean, as of now, Babcock's decided to put JVR and Marner together, Matthews and Nylander together, and then kind of leave Kadri on his own to push a line. And I do wonder if that'll change. I don't think it's going to change tonight, but I could see the blender coming out. I mean, but it's a long season.
You're right, and let me jump in, and I want to pose this question to Ray and to O. If you're Kadri, I mean, Kadri gets a couple last night, and I thought he was productive, but there was a play where he threw the puck to McCulloch in the slot, and if that's somebody who has a little bit more finish, like, that's a quality chance, because I think Kadri did a really good job of getting that puck, making a play behind the net, and putting it on a tee for your line mate, and when your line mate heals it and it rolls into the corner, like, do you guys not look at each other? You know, you come back to the bench. You both of you were highly skilled guys. You're sitting there looking at that guy going, are you kidding me? I just put it on a tee for you.
Yes. You're 100% correct.
I don't know if you remember the play or not. But
the classic line, Jamie, is, sorry, I put it right in your tape.
Sorry, I hit
you
right.
Would you like it?
Yeah, just where you want it.
Somewhere else.
Go ahead. But it's true. Like,
I think Kadri's going to get frustrated. I mean, I don't talk to him a lot. I don't, he's busy doing his thing. I'm around the rink a lot, but I don't engage in him a lot. But I've seen enough of him to think that he's going to want to play with a finisher at some point. You know, like, it's, you know, he's had a lot of these quotes of, you know, it's about the, you know, he was glad they introduced the team because, you know, it's about the name on the front, not the back, and, you know, saying all these things that are, they, you know, they're all really nice to say, and good on him for realizing that it's got to be about the bigger picture, and that with the contract that he has now, that it can be about the bigger picture. But offensive guys want and need the score. They need to. It's like air. And if you don't have it, frustration starts to crawl in. And it's unavoidable until the bigger picture changes. And for him, I think there'll be a point where he goes dry for a bit and they're going to work really hard, but he's not going to be getting the chances because the guys he's with aren't going to create them for him. As you said, Brian, he's driving the line. And then I think about Komarov, who had 19 goals last year, and the opportunity, at least early in the year, is not going to be there for him to get 19 goals until they see how all this young guy stuff works out. Like, will these young guys be prominent, outside of Matthews, but will they all be as prominent in a month? I don't know. I mean, that's what the games are going to tell us.
With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst here on Overdrive, and it's brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. The Leafs are in Minnesota tonight. You can watch it on TSN4, coming off a 5-4 overtime loss to Winnipeg. We'll get into the Laine story in a moment, and man, what a statement that was from him last night. But I think the bigger story in Toronto today is one we're very familiar with, and it's a conversation we've been having for 10 years, and that's the confidence in the goaltender, where Freddie Anderson, he struggled in Ottawa opening night. They score four for him, and he gives up five, and a couple of them were bad goals that he simply had to have. Last night, same kind of thing. They put four on the board. They've given him a 4-0 lead, and he allows Winnipeg to get back into it. Now, it's clearly not all his fault. Their defensive breakdowns were prominent last night. They're not a very good defensive team. They're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. But when you acquire a guy and give up valuable pieces for him and then go out there and give him a 5-year deal at $5 million, I think it's reasonable to say, yeah, that guy's going to shut the door down for you when you give him a 4-0 lead. And now Enroth is in net tonight. And from a controversy standpoint, Babcock likely won't care. The team definitely won't care. Anderson's the man, regardless of what happened tonight. But if Enroth goes in and stands on his head, you know how the fan base is going to react. They're going to be screaming for him to start on Saturday in Chicago. What have you made of Anderson and how the team might react to the way he played again last night?
Well, I don't think he's – I mean, it's not – I'm no goalie expert, but and I'll leave that to Noodles, but it's pretty clear he hasn't played very well. The quality of shots he's going to get this year, the quantity of shots is going to be a lot different than he's faced. And the numbers that he put up in Anaheim have to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt, given what I just said, that there's going to be more and better that he's going to have to face. Now, of the goals last night, like, which ones didn't you like?
I didn't.
Like, the three Laine goals are pretty damn good shots. Now, maybe he was down a bit quick on the first Laine goal, but, man, the guy was facing his own goalie, and then literally a half a second later, it was in the net.
Yeah, you're right, Ray. I actually, sorry to interrupt, I went through all five goals, and obviously every time a goaltender lets in a goal, you can go back and I can nitpick it right into the ground. There were some breakdowns, there were some issues. I didn't like the Scheifele goal. I know there's a bit of a screen. It comes through the triangle of Morgan Riley. I know it's a bit of a broken play with Marner blocking the shot, but I just, for me, and we talked about it earlier, you need a save at the right time. And that's what we, you know, I always toot the horn of guys like Jonathan Quick, who's a timely goaltender. Corey Crawford knows when to lock it down when Chicago maybe has a bump in the road. Like, the best goaltenders in the league always have that ability to make that save when the team needs it. And I feel like last night, Anderson didn't have that save. Now, he faced just over 20 scoring chances against. So that's a lot of work, and he made some great saves. But for me, you just need that save at the time when the team isn't deflated or is really back up against the wall, and he didn't have that.
You know, like last night in the third, you know, I guess it was Rader. You know when you can't tell when the momentum shifted? You know, you couldn't maybe exactly pinpoint it, but all of a sudden you realize you're watching a team that's under siege. And that's right. What it felt like about 2 or 3 minutes into the third period. I was like, oh, my God, they haven't got the puck out of the red line yet. And so now you can see the panic's in. And they're not making any passes. They're working like hell in their own zone. by the time they finally get the puck, they can get it to the red line, chip it in to change, and then while they change, here come the Jets again. So that is the time where the goalie's got to get his hands on it, make a save, freeze it, stop it. You're right, he wasn't able to make it. The sheer volume of goals is concerning, and whether they're great goals or not, that's going to get hung on the goalie eventually. And here, I mean, there's no question they didn't sign him to give up five goals. They could have kept the guys they had last year and done that.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
You know, I mean, they need him to be better for sure.
Yeah, and you're dealing, listen, the fan base, it's obviously a separate conversation. What they think within the organization is what really matters, because they're the ones making the call and they're the ones that are trying to build a championship caliber team. But in terms of the noise or the white noise, whichever way you want to label it, you're dealing with a fan base that is very skeptical of any new goalie, because they've seen this movie play out many times, from Raycroft to Toskala.
What do you mean? You're not talking about all the goalies they've drafted and developed?
Exactly. They haven't done it since Potvin. They haven't drafted and developed a goalie since Felix Potvin.
That's insane Potvin. To even think about that.
Exactly. They signed Cujo. They signed Belfour. So you're dealing with a fan base here that is walking into a situation, assuming it's going to buckle on them. And, you know, he gives up five opening night, five last night. Clearly not all his fault. I don't think anyone's claiming it is all his fault. But you look at the overtime winner. And this Line A kid, man, is he a stud. Like, that was a statement last night. And he's a special player. He's a special goal scorer. But everyone on the planet knew he was shooting that puck. Everyone knew it. And he goes top shelf on him.
It goes right in the pin of the net.
I hear you, but he's 6'5". How often are we going to hear he's 6'5"?
So if I'm a goalie, here's my move.
What do you think he's going to stand up?
Ray.
When's the last time a goalie stood up? 1978.
It's not about that. It's about waiting a split second.
No. Here's what I do. Jamie, tell me if I'm wrong.
What are you going to do?
As soon as the head goes down, because there's a split second when he looks down at the puck to shoot it, I'm just going to charge out and just stand it. Let it hit me right in the chest.
I like that.
But you know, it would just hit him right in the chest.
That's what you do, Ray. Suck on those apples.
Here's he tried to do that. Here's the thing. He tried to do that to Ehlers on the fourth goal. And how did that work out when he decided to roll his wrist and throw it over to Line A on the back?
See, there you go, though. That's a perfect example. He's picking his spots.
No.
And it feels like he's kind of like, what am I supposed to be doing right now?
I didn't fault that fifth goal was a ridiculous shot. And I give him full marks. There are a few things. Like, from a technical standpoint, I was telling you guys off air, there's some things that he needs to work on that can be adjusted. I think his footwork, there's a little bit of motion before he gets set. I look at Carey Price, who is the gold standard for goaltenders. Price doesn't have a lot of motion in his game. He's set for the puck, and then he has really good patience, but he goes down. He just knows when to go down, knows when to take that half second. I think Anderson needs a little bit more patience in his game. His depth last night on that fifth goal, it was decent. It's just, you look at his glove, he was showing his glove. He just got beat right by the ear, right off the post and in. I didn't like that Shifley one. That one kind of bothered me because it's short side. And if you look, he's actually a little bit deep and moving into the net on it. There's motion in that play, and that really bothered me.
Question for the group
here. Noodles, how do you get rid of the guess? If you're the goalie, right, because, I mean, there is some, you know, you can read the shot. We can call it whatever we want. But, I mean, at the bottom end of it, you are kind of, okay, the release is coming now, so you're kind of guessing right at that point of release. How do you take away total guess, which is what can deteriorate for sure for the goalies?
Well, that's the one thing. You're right. Like, from that point, like where Liney's able to shoot that puck, there it is playing the percentages. And the percentages is to take away the lower part of the net, because I believe it's like 88% of shots in the NHL go to the lower quadrants of the net. So you have to have a clean butterfly and try and be as big as far as your shoulders, lock them up so that you try and close off the top of the net. I was at a goaltender convention this summer, and it was put on. It was outstanding. There's a website called the Goaltender Guild, and they do a tutorial online. I sent this to a buddy, or somebody sent me a note on Twitter last night, and there's a thing called box control where you actually... you lock down the angle towards the puck. And, you know, Lundqvist is really good at it. Price is really good at it. The best. Like, Enroth is actually pretty good at it. Anderson made himself look a little bit small on that one.
Well, me and Brian have been at a goaltender convention for 10 years. It's called This Sucks. So when are we going to get to that?
Well, I think I'm just there's nothing I can do here other than tell you that I think Frederick Anderson has skill, but he also needs to show that he has consistency. And my biggest thing for him is he needs to show that he can play 60-plus games. There's going to be a big learning curve here for a guy who's never been a starter.
So if Enroth lights it up tonight, do you go back to Anderson on Saturday night regardless of what happens?
I say you might give Enroth another one and then just lay off it. Let Johnny Enroth rest.
Did you ever
think
say,
I'd say that?
I love Johnny Enroth.
We love a Johnny Enroth.
We're fans.
But who's to... I mean, one of the things you could pick at Anderson for in Anaheim was he had this thing about giving up a bad goal.
Yep.
Like, it's always been there for him. And so he's getting more shots and more dangerous shots. Not only Noodles does he have to show consistency of being able to play a lot, but this is a big step for him, and it's not in the easiest place.
No.
I'm pretty sure he could walk around Anaheim and nobody knew who he is.
Yeah.
And that's not happening here anymore.
Well, and you make a great point. The other thing, too, Brian and I were talking about, the mental capacity after a goal. Or you like last night, you could feel it coming on. You could feel like, okay, everyone's you-know-what was puckering up on the bench. He had to lock it down, make a save. Or look at his body language after a goal. Does he make a save right after that? Or all of a sudden do you feel like, oh, here we go? And to me, the capacity mentally is to... You look at Carey Price, you can't tell if he's down five, up five. His demeanor's always the same. And I think Anderson has that calmness in the net, but he still has to prove it. And that's the thing. We can talk about it until we're blue in the face. Until he shows this fan base and everyone that has brought him in and signed that consistency going to be there and that confidence and not giving up a timely bad goal, there's nothing we can do about it until he proves it.
Well,
one other thing for me, guys. Did anyone find it odd that Hyman took that last faceoff?
That was a bit strange.
When they were shorthanded?
Yeah.
They had Hyman and Komarov on the ice.
Well...
But they're shorthanded, isn't there? Like he's not a centerman.
That's a good point.
I know the thing was scuttled and Carrick took a whack at it and it got kept in, but it just struck me as odd. Like, why is he the guy?
Why not
like,
Bozak?
That's right-handed corner. Wouldn't that be your guy? I mean, we're sitting here nitpicking the goalie, it struck me that. As odd that Hyman was the guy to take
I can't
that
remember
job.
If they were forced on the ice, but that's on Mike Babcock then.
No, it was the start of a power play.
Yeah, that's...
Right? Start of a power play.
Well, and again, you got to give it up to this Line A kid because that was his Matthews opening night moment last night.
Man, like
how about his personality
puck.
After?
Wow, he was on... Well, he gave nothing to the media afterwards.
Other than his mustache is awful, too.
Right, but he was fired up for every single goal, as he should be, and everyone's trying to come up with comparisons, and people are comparing him to Brett Hull. Kind of reminds me of Kovalchuk a little bit. He just stalks around the ice.
Heavy shot. I mean, Ray, you played with Kovalchuk. I can't tell the mechanics of the release, but he seems to have that heavy release like Kovalchuk.
The three guys that I thought of in some mix, I played against Mike Bossy, and the unpredictability of Bossy's release, I see a little of that. The Hull strength to be able to shoot it when it's not in the right spot, like that one-timer, that wasn't exactly on the tee.
Yeah.
And his technique and strength, that reminded me of Hull. And then the overtime goal, this might be a little bit of a reach or different, but he looked like, to me, like Jeff Carter. You know, like the big right-handed shots, getting out into the open ice, and then the shot on the move. Like, this kid is a sniper, but I still would have drafted Matthews.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. We're not having that conversation right now. Because,
oh, good, not yet? Okay, well, that's when he gets his next hat trick.
Hey, I love that Winnipeg crowd. Good for them, because that felt like a European soccer game where they're chanting, Line A's better and Matthews sucks. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's what you want in pro sports.
Ray? If you want a sandwich at 3 a.m. in Minnesota, shoot me a text. I don't know if that's something that interests you, but I might have a spot for you.
You may have heard of a place?
May have heard of a place. I don't know. I got to find it. I got to Google it, but it was awesome.
Really?
That is interesting.
Was it in St. Paul or Minneapolis?
I got a 4:40 wake-up call.
So just go for one before the flight.
That's what I mean. And then I could have the noodles choking fit in security.
Just mix in a chicken parm while you're going through customs.
Oh, that would be great. Hey, by the way, Brian, enjoy the rest of the baseball playoffs.
Thank you.
Thanks, man, enjoy, Ed, when you loser. Yeah. Get lost. See you gotta fly.
You're such an idiot.
Yeah.
This Bye, guy's Ray. Such an idiot, right?
Enjoy yourself Late tonight, point. Ray. Yeah. There's Ray Ferraro, and he's on Overdrive, and it's brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. They get you out of your timeshare guaranteed or give you a complete refund with offices in Toronto, or you can visit timeshareexitteam.ca. Scotty Mack is going to come in. We'll ask him about the Dutchie blue steel on SportsCenter.
I know.
If it throws him off at all in terms of his analysis, because
it's the best thing ever.
It's aggressive.
He bebops around and then just does a deep stare into your soul.
It's the deepest soul-searching stare I've ever seen
on
SportsCenter.
We'll have to get Dutchie on one of these days to talk about it.
Yeah, we will. Dutch is the best.
He is the best.
If he could have done those hits with no tarp on, he would have.
Happily.
For sure.
Happily.
And
a tank top with a dumbbell, anything.
Instead of the stare, he just starts pumping iron and looking into the camera.
While Steve Phillips and Scotty Mack talk, he just does a set of 12.
Curls.
He does a 12-pack of curls and then just refocuses.
No tarp, too.
He's the best. Scotty Mack in studio next. All right, Scotty Mack is in studio, and we're happy to have him here for a number of reasons, but we've been talking about your SportsCenter hits throughout the playoffs, and you guys have been doing a great job, but we love Darren Dentition. We love Dutch. And we all kind of had the same experience when we were watching Dutchie do his thing on SportsCenter.
Yeah, I didn't even realize.
Well, he throws out his thing, and then he gives a strong look at the camera.
Oh, yeah.
Like a blue steel.
There's authority there.
Do you pick up on that when you're talking or what?
Yeah. The best.
It's like, did you hear that question I just asked?
The best. So we had a rough night after game four.
What, like butchering questions?
No. So you're taping, right? Because post game is being done at about 8 o'clock, and there's no live Sports Center till about 10. And we were like 15 take wonders that night. And one of the reasons why is these damn flies. And it's like 25 degrees outside in the middle of October, and you don't know why all these flies have come into a roof enclosed building. But these flies are buzzing around. They're landing on our face in the middle of our hits. It's making us laugh. One time, fly laces Dutchie right on the eyeball. Like, and he's trying. Phillips is in the middle of saying whatever he's saying, and Dutchie is, you know Dutch, right? Like, and poised, right? And he's like nodding at Phillips, and you see this fly go ping right off the white of the eyeball. He tries to hold firm, and then he just keels. Unbelievable.
Couldn't handle the heat.
We're usually like one or two take wonders, but after game four, we were down on the field for a good hour. I think producer George Nassios was getting a little frustrated.
That's why live is the best, because there's no
you
choice.
You can't get it back.
And you're going to not screw up. You do it, and it's over, and it's not happening again.
But if you miss on a word, you've got to recover.
Yeah, just fight through it.
You don't have a choice. Just grind it out. You're a human being. You make the odd mistake. But when you tape, you so badly want to be perfect. And the other thing is, these flies, they're landing on your face. So one of them landed on my hand that I'm holding the microphone with, and so, I hope they cover this because I'm not talking right now. But I'm moving my right hand over, and I'm trying to flick the damn thing off my hand and trying to be kind of covert about it. Anyway.
That's the thing, man. Like, flies and mosquitoes, they can throw everything out of whack.
Well, and there's nothing worse than one of those things go right into your ear, right? So that's what it didn't happen, but that's what I'm paranoid about. Because you ever had that happen where they go in and then you can hear the buzzing in there?
Then you're concerned that they're really going to get in there.
And I really starts eating away at my brain. There's not a lot in there
right.
to Lay begin eggs. With. So
it wouldn't be good. Lay eggs and all of that stuff. It's no good.
It's disgusting.
By the way, before we get into some very serious conversation about baseball here, you guys are big deals in the concession stands in Cleveland.
Really?
Come on.
Lots of Blue Jays fans. And anybody who stopped me, they weren't saying great job on SportsCenter or all that. They were always talking Overdrive. So you guys are big in Cleveland, Ohio.
Were you in a suit, or did you have the boys' small spring training?
I was in a suit, man. I was in a suit.
It
was
sharp looking.
It was a work day, and they had a good little burrito place down the third baseline. So
good man. Well, shout out to all the fans down there in Cleveland.
Yeah. I think there were Jays fans who'd come down, but everybody loves Overdrive down there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
We're massive.
You haven't made it. And Drew Carey, Doug. You and Drew Carey.
That's right.
Down in Cleveland.
That's right. Scott MacArthur in studio, our Jays reporter. We're going to get to the Jays, obviously, a lot over the next half an hour, 45 minutes. But you're a big Cubs fan, and they're in action tonight. And
I was talking last night.
They really stepped up. Do you see John Lackey go postal early in that game when that double play got thrown out of whack? But I was talking about Larry King sitting behind home plate.
Just rattling.
Why did he rattle you?
I don't know what it was, man. Did you notice him behind home plate in game three?
He's at a lot of Dodgers games. You know who sits beside him is Mary Hart.
Really?
I didn't even notice that. That's Mary Hart. The blonde woman sitting beside him is Mary Hart. And there
nobody will ever have nicer legs than Mary Hart, by the way. She led the way.
Is that right?
She used to sit at the Kings games.
She never took out insurance on her pins.
Are you sure?
She did.
I thought that was
Google
Vanna White.
No. Anywho.
Moving on.
So why does King rattle you?
I don't know what it is.
You don't like seeing an old man shrivel up before your eyes?
Yeah, it's the bifocals. It's the history. I know he's been married eight times, and He was eating, and it was a weird feeding scene.
Have you ever seen the Seinfeld episode where Jerry's about to go on stage, and the agent goes, just so you know, the pilot's in the stands, or the pilot's in the crowd. And Jerry's like, who cares? And all of a sudden, he locked eyes with the pilot.
That's me.
He choked up.
Transfixed on Larry King.
And it started when he was still doing his show on CNN. He's evaporating, right?
He's a caricature now. You know, like you look at him and you're like, this doesn't make sense.
Like, there are no shoulders. There's nothing there.
Mm-hmm. He's like 90 pounds.
How old would he be?
90 years old.
He's north of 80.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think he's high 80s.
High 80s?
I think so, yeah. I think he started in radio in like 1950.
I met him at the 2010 All-Star Game in Anaheim. Just shook his hand and I said, give me one piece of advice as a young broadcaster. Always ask why.
Thanks, Larry.
Larry King.
Hey, listen, man.
It was cool to meet him. It was cool to meet him. But yeah, it is distracting, and you do find that your eyes, because you recognize him and Mary Hart, you do find that your eyes get caught.
That's right.
Staring beyond home plate.
Well, a lot is made of the Marlins guy who shows up at all these big games, and he's there in his Marlins, like, loud jacket and hat. But I don't care about him. That guy doesn't mean anything to me. So he doesn't throw my watching experience or viewing experience off at all. But Larry King, I don't know what it was. I couldn't. And you're right. I'm looking at a picture Steph just sent us. Mary Hart right beside him. There's Mary Hart.
In her Dodgers jacket.
Yeah.
A diehard fan.
Big fan. Anyway, the Jays season, obviously, newsflash, has come and gone. This one stung a lot more, this ALCS, than last year. Because last year, you could make a strong case, even as a subjective, biased Blue Jay fan, that Kansas City was the better team, or at least an equal team, and had the experience from going to the World Series the year before. They had home field. This is very different, because with all due respect to Cleveland, this is not an all-time team we're talking about. I could see Cleveland getting swept in the World Series. Absolutely, I could see that happening. And I think it's going to get worse as time goes on, because you're going to look back and say, okay, yeah, they had Miller, they had Allen, they had Kluber.
Putting Kluber out there twice, two or three times, you're going to get swept?
I think so. If you're matching with Arrieta or Lester or Kershaw, absolutely you can beat him.
How legendary is this Miller character? Is it just that he against the Jays, or is he?
No, he's a legitimate stud reliever, but still, I mean, this series was up for grabs. The Jays should have won this series.
The problem is, and this doesn't necessarily pertain to the Jays in Cleveland, but it could if you believe that the Jays are the much better team. The thing with baseball is that it's played so differently in the playoffs than it is in the 162. Game in 183 day marathon, because you always have off days coming up. You never play more than 3 days in a row. In the division series, it's two off day game five, if it goes that far. In the championship and World Series, it's three off day, if it gets that far. So you can use your relievers in a far different way than you do in the regular season when you might not have an off day for another 17 days. You can't blow arms out. You have to live for the marathon as opposed to the sprint. Terry Francona, it worked for him in game one against Boston. His starting pitcher that night, I think it was Josh Tomlin. Into some trouble out in the fifth inning. He goes to Andrew Miller, and it works. And they shut it down over the final 15, 16 outs. Okay, I've got something here. And that started the trend. Now, Oakland tried it a couple of years ago, building through the bullpen. The L.A. Dodgers are doing it with Kenley Jansen coming in at times in the seventh inning and stuff like that. But if it works for Terry Francona in the first game of the playoffs, it reinforces the philosophy, and then it becomes the philosophy. And they're going on fumes because Salazar and Carrasco are hurt, and Trevor Bauer annihilated his pinky finger on a drone. So they're really short.
They are
pitching, and they're piecing it together.
Exactly, and that's my whole point. And listen, it really works because they granted Miller a lead every time he came in. Where if you get after Kluber, like they should have in game one, when they had runners in scoring position for the first four innings and they could not get a big hit.
That's the thing. You have to have a lead.
You got to have a lead. Tomlin, listen, with all due respect, and he pitched really well against them. There's no excuse for him putting up the numbers and the performance that he did against them in game two. And then Bauer leaves two outs into the first inning. And sure, Miller and Allen are going to get into the game at some point, but you're still going through middle relief for three or four innings. So, you know, if I told you before the series the Jays were going to squander 12 total runs over the first five games, you'd say they won in five. They won in five.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They could only score eight. And five of them or four of them came in one game.
Their pitchers gave up 25 hits
in five games. No one's mentioning that.
Their
bullpen didn't give up one run.
Right. In 13 and two-thirds innings. Their starting pitchers, or the team as a whole, 25 hits in five games. That's five hits per game. Now, unfortunately for the Jays, six of those were home runs, although five were solo. That's the key. They got out-homered 6-2. They got a solo job from Michael Saunders in game three. They got a solo job from Josh Donaldson in game four. And it is no coincidence that the winner of each game was the team that hit the most home runs in that game.
Right.
And the Jays are a power team. And when the power disappears, Brian, the runs dry up. And that's a problem in the playoffs because the statistics show that with starting pitchers, you get to them a little more the second time around than you did the first. You get to them a lot more the third time around than you did the first and the second. And if it happens to go into the fourth turn, which it very rarely does now, you get to them even more. Well, a bullpen game like Cleveland in game number three, regardless of the quality of the pitcher out there, not one Cleveland reliever of the six they used in that game recorded more than five outs. So the hitters are coming up and seeing a different guy each time, and he's got a fresh arm. And so you aren't doing the damage that you would do second, third time through against a starting pitcher because he's starting to tire, because there's a little less velocity on his fastball, because you've gotten in tune with his pattern on that given day because you've seen him a couple times already.
All right, Scott MacArthur's in studio. At 6 p.m., we're really going to get into what's going to happen this offseason. Obviously, a lot of focus on Bautista, Edwin, how the team should handle it, how the fan base will react to whatever happens. So, Scotty Mac sticking around. This is Overdrive TSN 1050. All right, Scotty Mac in studio. We're putting a bow on the Blue Jays season. What was the mood like in the building last night when Bautista came up in the ninth and the streaker ran onto the field?
Everybody was hoping that Buddy's pants stayed up.
Did they kick his ass?
Yeah, it was a solid tackle on the infield dirt behind second base.
I still want the taser out.
Like, one guy slowed him down, second guy, shoulder in, like, perfect form tackle. Like, grade 9 football, coach teaching you how to do it, bam, led with the shoulder. It was beautiful.
Because he had no shirt on.
Didn't that take away from, like, the luster of, like, Jose?
I thought, like, you get hammered, you do something stupid like that, you spend a night in the clink, whatever. I thought the timing was ignorant.
It was
Jose's last
timing.
At bat.
You know? Yeah, it was terrible timing. Listen, a streaker, I think sometimes people take it too seriously. Sometimes it can just be stupid. It can be kind of funny at times.
Until you know my example.
Yeah, until someone does something stupid and pulls a knife out or whatever. I hear you. And that's why it should never happen because whatever. But if after it goes down, everyone goes their separate ways. Whatever. It's ultimately mostly harmless. But last night, the timing, you're right, because we were in here doing the show, but everyone knew Bautista. This is probably it for him.
Yeah.
Twitter's blowing up that people are standing up, and this idiot jumps on.
That's why I wish that there was a taser involved.
Apparently, he was 36 years old, which I don't know why that surprises me, but it does.
That you're a grown man?
Yeah, I was thinking 17-year-old.
There was a
40-year-old.
No. There's a 40-year-old that threw a beer can on the at a player the other day.
That's a good point. The 41. Ken Pagan. Yeah.
Wasn't he 40 years old? Isn't he like 41 or something?
A middle-aged guy, for sure.
And you can't allow one idiot in 50,000, just like we've seen it. But it's been...
Well, but this is the thing about the reputation of the Rogers Center and Blue Jay fans. It's one more thing you can add to the list. A streaker running on the field in the ninth inning when Bautista's up to plate for the final time, more than likely as a Blue Jay. We'll pick up on that conversation. What's going to happen with Bautista? What will happen with Edwin? What kind of an offseason should we be expecting? Scott MacArthur will stick around. Final hour up next. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.